Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to episode 49 of Dogcast Radio. In this episode, we learn about the ancient art of Reiki.
It's a bit like tuning into a radio station. Each of us have our own individual energy that is a signature, like a fingerprint would be. Mm-hmm. And in using that, the Reiki practitioners learn to be able to tune into that and to help balance it.
Buddy's been enjoying summer.
For me, the best aspect of summer is the barbecue. It means my people will be out in the garden for ages, and the air will be filled with wafting scents of very delicious things.
And Kate and Nick return with the Dogcast Radio news.
In this episode, we've sniffed out a couple of stories about sniffer dogs.
But first, more about a story that made quite a splash.
Plus, I'll be bringing you a book review, giving you an opportunity to help raise money for Dogs for the Disabled, and some interesting news from Hound TV. But before all that, we have a breed profile of probably the most recognisable dog, the one breed that almost everyone can identify, and that's the Dalmatian. To find out more about this beautiful breed, I talked to Deborah from Christaway Dalmatians. So we all know one when we see one, but not many of us know about their history.
That's mainly because the history is a little bit of a mystery. Yes, because there's no proof that they actually come from Dalmatia, which is what they're named after. But because there were some found there, that's basically why they became Dalmatians. There was a couple of spotted dogs found there, but there's no proof to say that they actually did come from there.
And what was their function sort of in the early days, though?
The first, I suppose, recorded function, and it's of when they became popular, was that they used to guard the horses on the carriages with the horse-drawn vehicles. And they were actually, would run along with the horses. Some would run underneath the carriages, some would run at the back, and then when the drivers would go in and deliver or do whatever they were doing, go and visit the properties, the homesteads, the dogs would be out there with the horses guarding everything that were there.
See, I didn't realise that. You know, I thought it was sort of a fashion thing that you had your spotted dog running with your horses. I didn't realise they had this guarding job as well.
Yes, they've actually got a natural affinity with horses. And most Dalmatians actually get on very well with horses. That's why I had went for a Dalmatian in the beginning, because I had horses and I wanted a dog that would run along with the horse.
Yeah. And do they still have that sort of natural guarding instinct as well?
Yes. They're very friendly dogs and they're very people-oriented, but they are very good watchdogs. So they will always alert you if there is someone around or even someone walking past. And that's basically the main time when they bark. And if they do bark, it'll usually be because there's something happening. They've seen something or someone's at the front or something unusual is happening.
Yeah, particularly if somebody's near your horses, presumably. So can you tell us some more? Sort of, you know, everybody knows what they look like. Now we know a little bit about sort of where they've come from. What's their temperament like? What are they like to live with?
Some of them are fantastic to live with, and some of them are very outgoing. It depends on the individual dog. And I've found that you can get some that are just absolutely gorgeous. They love to sit at your feet, and they love to come up for a pat, and just really sweet dogs. And then you have the other ones that are like, here I am, where are we going now, what are we going to do? And they can sometimes drive you a little bit crazy, but they're very, very affectionate. So they're a happy dog. They usually respond well to people they meet, and they're not aggressive as in some breeds where there could be a fear that, okay, they bite. A Dalmatian should never, ever bite. anyone, because that's not their natural temperament.
Yeah, yeah. So they're kind of aware of their surroundings, but they're not going to leap into action and, as you say, bite someone.
No, that's their bark. A lot of people would get worried because of the bark and think, oh, but if they actually then maybe went, say, into someone's yard, most of them would probably run up and lick them and jump all over them. But, yeah, their bark is like a warning bark and can be quite loud, and that's why they are very good as a watchdog.
Yeah, yeah. How do they bond with their family? Are they sort of a family-orientated dog, or are they sort of a one-person dog?
I think it depends on the environment they go into, because they are really people-oriented. So they will usually, they love families, which is what we sort of, a lot of our dogs go to families.
Mm.
And, I mean, a lot of people will get them and it's a one-on-one, and the dog will be very, very loyal. But I've noticed if you ever have to rehome a Dalmatian to somewhere else, they really fit in quickly. They respond very quickly to all that positive attention and things like that. So they really will get on with anyone. And they're not very often that they'll get very, like some dogs will get protective of one person in a family.
Yeah.
A Dalmatian will basically go to anybody who has food.
Oh, this sounds so like a Labrador.
Very similar to a Labrador. We often say that a Dalmatian is an energetic Labrador.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Because labs are energetic enough. I mean, saying that, they're an energetic lab then. Let's talk about the exercise requirements. How much exercise are they going to need?
A lot of people say that they need these masses of exercise and that every day they have to be taken out for these long runs or these long walks. But I find the main thing they want to do is be with you. So they, I mean, it's a general exercise. So I took two of my dogs down to the beach today for half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
They went for a run. A couple of the other dogs, I just spent an hour in the backyard throwing balls, playing with them and doing those sorts of things, and they're quite happy. So the big thing is that they like to be with you because they will get bored if they're just left. They're not the sort of dog you can just leave in a backyard and ignore, because they really like to be with you. And I find really just a normal, general sort of exercise like any dog. Take them out for a walk, spend them some time with them, and then you really won't have any problems.
Yeah.
But they will run as far as you want them to. So if you want a dog that will go running with you, from the time they're about 12 months, then they can go and do 5K runs.
Mm.
I wouldn't take one of my dogs on a 5K run every day,
No. But
they can do it, because that's basically what they'll breed for, to go with those carriages and keep going all day.
Mm. You know, many breeds, I'm thinking sort of Border Collie, and even Labs to an extent, you know, they've got that need to have their brain exercised as well, haven't they? You know, they want to, you know, they train well, they do tasks well. Is that true of a Dalmatian?
Yes, Dalmatians actually will train really quickly and really easily. A lot of people say, oh, Dalmatians are dumb dogs, because the people that lived next door to them had one and it did stupid things all the time. But that's probably, when you inquire about it, it's usually that the dog's been left in the backyard and no one's ever done anything with them. But they actually respond to training very well, because they respond to food. So the food training works brilliantly, and there is a lot of Dalmatians that have achieved at the highest level in agility and obedience and a whole range of different activities. So they do love doing those sorts of things, because, again, it's another chance that they're with you and they will really respond to all that sort of training.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, I suppose, you know, any of your dogs with sort of your high energy and a bit of intelligence, you've got to channel that. As you say, if you stick them out in the backyard, they're going to get into trouble because they are clever. You know, they're looking for something to do. But if you can channel it, you can get such good results, can't you?
Excellent results. At one stage, the number one agility dog over here in Australia was a Dalmatian. Yeah, so she was, and she won all high awards all over the place. So it was just a brilliant Dalmatian. She would do anything.
Oh, lovely. Now, grooming. Let's talk about grooming, because I always think, I chose a black lab because I figured then I could wear black and navy and things and the hairs wouldn't show up too much. Then I completely shot myself in the foot because we've adopted a cream Labrador. So now I'm stuffed. I can't, you know. And is it because it always strikes me, this is the one thing I've always thought about Dalmatians, I wouldn't know what to wear because black hair and white hair is going to come out and it's going to show up on anything. So do that. Yes.
That's one of the things with a Dalmatian, and they don't have a set time when they have a coat drop. They will actually lose their coat all the time. So they always have hair coming out. But if your dog's outside, then it's not really noticeable. Mm. And if your dog is inside, then basically if you give them a brush every day, you're going to get rid of a lot of that hair and you will cut down on it. But you notice it more when the dogs are inside. And that's why it's really important to just give them a quick brush every morning, and then you've got rid of most of that hair that they're going to lose for the day. But that's probably the one thing about them, is that they do shed their hair all the time.
Because I think sometimes people think, oh, with a short-coated breed, you're not going to have too much of a problem. But it's not always true, is it?
No. And that's probably one of the downsides that you tell people. Although once someone's got a Dalmatian, they really don't care.
Yes.
And you can always tell someone who owns a Dalmatian because they've always got usually white hair on something.
Yes.
Wool is probably the worst thing, like one of your wool cashmere coats. They tend to attract the hair.
Yes. Yeah. And some things, once the hair is in there, you cannot get it out, can you?
It just depends. A lot of the those sticky rolly removers that you can get, they do actually work very well. But Dalmatian hair has sort of a tiny little hook is the best thing, right in the follicle there at the end, and that's why it sticks. So a vacuum cleaner works well too if you need to.
Yes.
But I mean, we have slate floors and wooden floors here, so it's easy. You just put the broom through and it's gone.
Yeah, yeah. But it's, I mean, if it's anything like my labs, it's got to be sort of a daily thing, hasn't it? You just got to keep fighting this influx of hair.
Yeah, well, that's right. You just have to keep doing it.
Yeah.
But if you've got a long-coated dog, they're going to have to be brushed every day.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, it's just actually easier and quicker to brush a Dalmatian because their hair is so short. And they do keep clean really easily.
Yeah.
So they can go for a swim, go in the mud, and you'll find that it just drops off.
Yeah.
And they're clean the next day. So they're pretty easily maintained that way.
Yes. I do like short-coated dogs. I really do. Do they like swimming?
Some of them love swimming.
Mm.
Some of them will just dive into the water. Others, I don't know, others are not sure. So we take our dogs to the beach, and we have some dogs that just run straight out into the waves, and we have others that will run onto the edge but won't go out. I've got two dogs that if there's a swimming pool somewhere, they go visiting to someone's house, they can be very embarrassing because they jump in the pool.
Oh, bless.
So in general, they're not worried about water at all, but a lot of it would be if they're introduced to it when they're young and they're used to going.
Yes,
near it. But a lot of them will actually paddle in their water bowls and those sorts of things.
Now, obviously, they're all sort of individuals, but, you know, generally, what are they like with other dogs? You know, if you're out on the walk and you encounter other dogs, what's their attitude going to be?
It really depends on the dog. We have a lot of no-lead areas down here. Same as over there. I'll take four dogs at a time, and my dogs don't worry about any other dogs at all.
Yeah.
If the dogs come up, they all have a wag of the tail. Lots of Labradors, Golden Retrievers, little dogs don't worry about it at all. I tend to find that people who maybe have one dog haven't socialised the dog with puppy training when they first got it.
Yeah.
Often then they can be maybe very guarded when they're walking them. So a lot of it really comes down to the environment that the dog has come from and what they've been exposed to when they're young. But if they're taken and socialised when they're young, they don't have any other problems with other dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
At all. And that's, we have males who aren't de-sexed, and our males run together, and they go down and run with other dogs, and we don't have any problems.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they do, obviously, they are striking visually, and you know, you've got the 101 Dalmatians image. I imagine when you're out, particularly with more than one Dalmatian, the attention from people, you know, you must be sort of, perhaps a 20-minute walk takes an hour to get through with people coming up to you.
Not as much as it used to be, but you still get lots of the children.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a Dalmatian, there's a Dalmatian, there's a Dalmatian. I think a lot more now people talk to their kids about you don't run straight up to a dog, so they're not all running up trying to pat. But yes, if people see a Dalmatian, they usually want to come over and ask about them and have a little talk and have a pat of the dog. And the dogs always, they love it. They love people coming up and giving them attention because they usually have some sort of food that they can give them at the same time.
Oh, this sounds like my kind of dog.
Yes.
I can be friendly for food.
Oh, yes. That's one of the things with Dalmatians. They will just keep eating and eating and eating. And they can get bloated. They're not like a lot of other dogs who will eat till they're full and then leave it. A Dalmatian will just keep going. So you really have to watch them with the food.
Yeah.
And make sure it's always kept in a place that they can't break into, because if they can, they will.
Oh, yeah. Saying that, sort of, are there any, well, what are the health issues that, you know, if you're going to go and look at Dalmatians, what health tests, you know, should you be looking for?
Well, in Australia, and I think it's the same in England, in some other countries it's different. They have, due to their breeding, they have a lot of problems that we don't have. Basically, there's very few major problems with a Dalmatian as compared to other breeds. You have deafness because the puppies don't get their hearing till about from 2 weeks to 6 weeks. So you have to make sure that the puppy can hear when you go and buy a puppy. But a breeder will have all have checked that thing already and will already have assessed their puppies and will know who can hear and who can't. That's the first thing. So if someone is buying a puppy from a breeder, there really isn't going to be a chance that they will have a puppy that is deaf. But if anything that's born with a white coat, same as white-coated cats, cattle dogs, Australian cattle dogs, they all have that gene, and it can come through. Mainly that they're not good on high-protein diets. So in one way that's a good thing, because all your really super expensive top dog foods are very high in protein. And Dalmatians do better on a low-protein food because they can be get kidney stones, especially in the males. And that also comes through on some breeding lines, and that is due to a lot of these high proteins and high levels of purines that can be in their system. So you keep the protein low on their food, and that helps to eliminate problems. And as a result of often with the high protein, they can get a few coat problems. So they might have bouts where they get a bit of a pinkiness on the coat and that sort of thing. And usually when you talk to people, you'll find they've been feeding them food that has lots of colourings, flavourings, super high protein. Basically, they've been feeding them people food, what they're eating, the dog's eating. And a Dalmatian really doesn't do well on that sort of thing. They really do better on a plain, really plain diet.
Yeah.
And if you stick to all those things, you really aren't going to have, you're going to have very few problems. Anyone who's looking for a really affectionate dog who wants a mate or for a family, I really think they are an ideal dog. As long as you have the time to spend with them, take them for a bit of exercise. If you're someone who's working long hours and the dog's going to be spending most of the time by themselves all week, then probably that's not the dog for you. And that's very similar to Labradors as well. They're the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, they like to have company. Dalmatians are excellent dogs to have with another dog. You have no problems at all. I mean, they love having that company, but they still do really well if they're in a one-on-one household.
As long as they've got sort of company and affection from somebody.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they really don't care sometimes who it's from at all.
Oh, and if it's accompanied by food, all the better.
Yes, if there's food, they will be your best friend. Even if they don't know you, you will ever become their new best friend.
Oh.
So, not only do they look gorgeous, they sound pretty gorgeous to live with too, if you can give them the time they deserve. To find out more about Deborah and Christaway Dalmatians, which is in New South Wales, Australia, follow the link on the Dogcast Radio site. Old dogs, like old shoes, are comfortable. They might be a bit out of shape and a little worn around the edges, but they fit well. Bonnie Wilcox.
You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. Buddy's Diary.
Hello, Buddy the Black Labrador here. The weather has been so much warmer lately, which is great as we get to spend more time in the garden. Even my people have been outside more, often doing something called gardening. This is a game that people play with dogs. They have to pretend that they don't want the dogs to play, but why else would they do this gardening? Gardening involves my people hiding a lot of things called plants in the ground so that dogs can have fun finding them and digging them up. Plants come in all sizes, so all dogs can find one that suits them. Big or small, there's everything from a tiny flower to bigger bushes that can be quite a challenge. The most fun is something called bulbs. These are chewy little balls that are hidden right underneath the ground. A dog has to use his nose to locate them, then dig down to get his prize. It's a lot of work, but well worth it, as you can first throw the bulb around and chase around the garden with it before you lie down and chew it up. The most important bit of the game for the dog is not to be found by a human, as then they have to act all cross. I know they're not really angry, as they always plant more things for us to discover. Great summer fun for all. There is one part of gardening I don't like. I have talked before about my dislike of that awful creature, vacuum. Well, imagine my horror when I came across a creature that must be an evil cousin of vacuum out in the garden. As I was peacefully snoozing the morning away, the quiet was shattered by a roaring and growling. I couldn't believe it, but my tall male person was taking the creature making all this noise for a walk around the garden. This beast is called Moa, and while vacuum eats dog hair, Moa is even worse as he eats grass. Yes, grass. When he's finished, there's not a blade of decent length left in the garden. Grass is really important to dogs. If you're feeling a bit under the weather, a few mouthfuls of grass will have you right as rain in no time. Of course, it makes you quite ill first, but you feel better in the long run, and grass eating is an impulse that cannot be denied. Grass is perfect for rolling around in on your back, and for hiding things, and for exploring, and so comfortable just to lie on. Moa destroys all this, and I would ban him if I could. Fortunately, he doesn't come out that often, as my people complain about what hard work he is. The warmer weather seems to make my people want to play games, and of course we dogs join in too. One popular game is a tennis ball on a string attached to a tall stick. The people bash the ball with bats, and the ball flies round. Not much for dogs to do, you might think, but there is. Our party is the most skillful. We wait for just the right moment when we can lunge forward and grab the ball in our teeth without getting whacked on the head by bat or ball. When they see how easily we are able to leap forward and catch the ball, they try to make it more fun for us by telling us to go and lie further away from the game, which means that we have to try even harder to get the timing right. They're great fun, my people. For me, the best aspect of summer is the barbecue. It means my people will be out in the garden for ages, and the air will be filled with wafting scents of very delicious things. Star, Tom and I always loiter as close to the barbecue as we can, which is sometimes difficult as it gets very hot. We wait and we hope, and to be honest, we do draw quite a bit. The reward always comes through, and eventually some of the delicious food gets knocked off the barbecue and falls to the ground. When the food first falls off, it's much too hot to pick up. But if I don't, another dog will. So it's a delicate matter to delay just a few seconds to allow enough cooling, but to jump in first. My strategy is then to hold the hot food very carefully and run away for as long as I can stand the burning sensation in my mouth. Then I drop the food, but I stand guard over it and nose it and pour it until it's cool enough to eat. Don't feel too sad for the other dogs who weren't fast enough, because my people are very kind and can't stand to see one of us eat while the other two sadly watch. They always find us all some tasty morsel. So you see, it's a win-win situation. Oh yes, the joys of summer, you can't beat them, unless it's the joys of winter, or the joys of spring, or, well, you get the idea. Till next time.
I once decided not to date a guy because he wasn't excited to meet my dog. I mean, this was like not wanting to meet my mother. Bonnie Schachter. Do you know what Reiki is? Are you aware of the benefits of using Reiki with dogs? I talked to Penny Leash, who's an expert in several kinds of Reiki. My first problem was that I couldn't pronounce all the different types of Reiki that Penny has mastered, so I asked her to.
Well, the Usui Reiki mm-hmm. is a Japanese technique, mm-hmm. And the Karunakai is also that is a little bit different. They're all based on the original Japanese form, and the sacred flames, these are, I guess my description for them is they're like the colors in a rainbow or like different forms of martial arts. They're a little variation here and there. Some people like one better than another or find it more comfortable, kind of a personal fit, like someone enjoying Taekwondo but not wanting to do jiu-jitsu or something of this nature. Or tennis versus racquetball or something like that. It's a fit. It's a personal fit. And some people, like me, like to study a number of them and then blend them to suit the individual client and what fits them.
Okay, so, I mean, what is Reiki then?
Well, Reiki originates from the Japanese words. Rei means spirit or life, and ki means energy. And the general translation is a universal life force energy. It's a non-invasive, holistic energy that is positive, and it's something that's around us all the time and that our bodies use. Every living thing generates energy and has energy and uses energy. And it's a bit like tuning into a radio station. Each of us have our own individual energy that is a signature, like a fingerprint would be.
Mm-hmm.
And in using that, the Reiki practitioners learn to be able to tune into that and to help balance it, because when our body is sick or stressed or even in competition of some nature, we're using it heavily, or we're changing it, or we're stressing a particular part of it. And by balancing that, we bring everything, the mental, the physical, everything into alignment again.
And it's done, isn't it, without actually touching the patient?
It can be. Now, there are hand positions with humans and with animals that can be done putting your hands directly on them. The nice part about it is that it's not required, which means that someone who is very ill or an animal who's been traumatized and is perhaps not safe to touch because they're aggressive, or wild animals in zoos and things like that, that they can be treated without having to touch them.
Mm.
And that makes it very amenable to using in circumstances. Burn patients are a perfect example, and some cancer patients, where touch is not comfortable.
I was going to say, what kind of, you know, ailments or illnesses can it be used for?
It can actually be used for anything. It is a balancing technique which helps put your body back in its normal state, in its natural state, when it's at full health and well-being. And so it's not limited to a particular ailment or a particular type of illness. It is used by people who are working with animals that need to recover from surgeries. It's used with animals who are in a transition phase, and we know they're going to die, but it helps them be more comfortable and have less pain and less anxiety during the process. And it can also be used for just general well-being to keep things in balance and encourage good health and maintain peak performance, as in racehorses and show animals that some people want to have right at their peak all the time.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not it's not really limited that way. One of your UK authors, and Margaret Coates, did hands-on healing for pets and healing for horses, and I love the way she explains those things and gives the general overview, and I've used her books extensively during my learning processes too.
Mm. Do you have any sort of examples of dogs that you've treated?
Yes, I have several that I have treated, and one in particular was a Wisla. He had been a rescue dog, been abused, was malnourished as a puppy, and had a number of problems, ended up having to have a hip replacement. So he had a lot of physical challenges. And I used the Reiki with him extensively because he had problems eating when he first came to me. He had problems trusting people. Mm-hmm. And as he went through the surgeries, and I used the Reiki all the way along the way, and even his vet said it was amazing that he recovered much more quickly when he had some problems after the surgery. They didn't end up having to take him back into the surgery. We were able to get it calmed down and get the bleeding controlled and keep him relaxed so that he was not bothering the wounds.
Mm.
And it was a very, very nice experience. And when it came to the time that, you know, that we lost him eventually, he was peaceful, he was quiet, he was calm, he was up and doing things the day before, and he was able to be completely relaxed rather than anxious and scared, and he had a lot less pain. We were able to use very little pain medication with him in spite of his illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And these are one of the things that the Reiki can do, and even in people, they're using it in cancer treatment centers, is because they find that it stabilizes blood pressure, it reduces the side effects from medications and treatments when you're using traditional treatments, and it will also help reduce pain. So all of those things are beneficial, and in working with a vet, whether they're allopathic, holistic, whatever their veterinary preference is, it doesn't interfere with any of the treatments.
Yeah, yeah. So, for example, I mean, you know, with an older dog that's perhaps suffering from arthritis, I mean, would that be a good...
Yes. Mm. Yes, it would, because it can reduce the need for medication by reducing the pain and allowing them to be more comfortable so that less medication is more effective.
And obviously, with the reduction in pain, do they get more movement back as well?
They might. It depends on the age of the dog and their condition, but generally, if they're more comfortable, they are able to move better, get more exercise, and that will promote a better ability to move more easily, because they tend not to move when they're uncomfortable and when it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
And as in most things, the lack of exercise then is a self-propagating thing that then it hurts to move and they get weaker.
Yeah.
So if they feel better, they will continue to move and they will continue to exercise, and you can walk them more or play with them more to help maintain their physical condition. So yes, it does.
Yeah, yeah. Would it work as well with sort of a, you know, a behavioral problem, sort of aggression or something like that?
Yes, it can be very helpful. It's not something I would recommend that someone who is not trained in working with them or trained in managing behavioral problems try to do on their own. Mm. Obviously, if you're no Reiki and you want to use it, you can use it anywhere or anytime. But if you're dealing with a specific problem, I would not recommend someone who's not trained try to do it, because you do need to use appropriate caution. However, they are using it in a number of animal shelters and clinics and training facilities and finding that it works very, very well and helps calm the dogs and helps bring them to a point where they are more adoptable, they are easier to train, and they get along better with other people and other dogs.
Mm. Oh, that's excellent that it's helping them find new families then, isn't it?
Yes, yes, it does. And they have the shelters have been amazed, because they will have volunteers come in, and in one case there were two of them, and one would sit at one end of the kenneling foot that they used in the shelters, and one would sit at the other, and they would both do the Reiki, and they said the entire shelter would become quiet. All of the dogs that were barking, that were carrying on, that were distressed, everything would just be quiet, and they would all just come to the front and sit there and look at one or the other of the people and sit there very peacefully and happy and just wait and enjoy the Reiki. Mm. And then they would take them out to play and exercise after that, and they said it was the change was amazing.
Mm. Now, I didn't know. That's interesting. I didn't know you could sort of do it en masse, for want of a better word. You know, I thought it was a one-to-one thing. I didn't realize you could do it for several, you know, animals in one go.
Yes, you actually can in a situation like that. It takes a bit of practice, but you're actually, you're balancing the energy of the animals, but you're also balancing the energy around them.
Mm.
And by doing that, Reiki is one of the ways that the instructors explain Reiki is that it's a positive energy, it goes where it's needed, and it never does any harm. So by doing that kind of thing, you're taking the negative out of the environment there, and skilled practitioners do use it to affect environmental things around them too, when they've had, you know, particularly in trauma situations and things. So, yeah, it can be, and it's very interesting the effects it can have.
Yes, yeah. And is Reiki something that sort of can work immediately, or is this something sort of you might have to have, you know, two or three sessions of before you start seeing effects?
Well, that depends on the person or on the animal. It can work immediately, yes. And many people notice that they feel, and animals do too, you can see it in their reactions, that you can see them relax. They'll be quieter. Some will come up to you or present a part of their body that they feel they want more work on. I had a dog who would turn around and just show me the part of the body that she wanted me to work on.
Mm-hmm.
She would just come right up to me when I would sit down to do the Reiki, and if she wanted it on her back or her hip or whatever was bothering her that day, she would kind of wiggle her way around to where she was just in the right position. She'd kind of like they do when you're scratching them or petting them, and they keep moving around to where what they want scratched.
Yeah.
And so they would come and show you that. And you can see it in their demeanor. Animals are much more sensitive than people. People quite often have varying reactions because we carry a lot of other emotional baggage and stress and things that interfere with our perception of those things. But animals can get an awful lot out of it in a very short time, and they don't need as much time. It's, for example, a person might want an hour session or a half-hour session or something, where an animal that is just getting a wellness session might be fine and happy with 10-15 minutes because they just soak the energy and they don't require a lot of other clearing types of things that we just tend to tie up in our mind.
Yeah. I suppose they just know it's making me feel better or it isn't. You know, they don't have all that baggage.
Right, exactly. And they're very perceptive to that. They sense that, they know that, they feel it, and we have our mind out on other things. We're not always in tune with those things. It feels good at the time, or we feel relaxed, but our mind is off on what do we have to do tomorrow, what's happening here, what's our next appointment, and we don't really relax and just shut down and enjoy it and let it take effect and feel it.
Yeah.
The animals do. They notice it, and a person can see it in their reaction.
Now, you're obviously helped in your work because you're an empath and an animal communicator, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, how does that work for you?
Well, for me, I found myself doing it automatically, and then I started working harder to be able to control it and understand what I was getting, and started reading and studying and talking to other people who were able to do those things to figure out how to use it to my advantage. But I found that with the Reiki, that's when I noticed that I was doing it automatically.
Mm-hmm.
When I would do the Reiki, I would start to notice that it was just a subtle thing. It's not like they come up and write something on a chalkboard to you, but it would be a subtle impression, like when you're thinking about something or that kind of crosses your mind, that, that hip hurts, or she had a fall, or somebody kicks this dog at one time and there's a sore rib there, or there was a cracked rib or something, I would just kind of get a subtle impression that there was something going on in a particular area. And I would notice if I moved my hands toward that area that I could feel energy being pulled to that particular point. And that usually gave me a confirmation that that impression was correct, because that energy a good comparison would be when a person has arthritis and has a sore joint, quite often it feels hot. You'll feel heat on that joint from the inflammation or something. Well, and it's a feeling of a bit of warmth, that there's energy and warmth there.
Yeah. So this was something that sort of came with the Reiki. This wasn't something that you did as a child or something.
Actually, I think I always did it. I just didn't understand it because I have always been around animals, and I've always had a lot of animals around me. And I do believe that I was doing it, and I just never questioned it. And I think a lot of people are doing it that are very close to animals and are very around animals a lot and are very talented with animals. They just don't realize that they're actually communicating. They just feel that, well, they have a lot of talent, they have a lot of skills, they have good intuition, and, well, that's part of what that is. Is that they're getting the messages, they're hearing it, they're understanding what the animals are telling them. They just don't quite understand that that the animals may actually be telling them that. That they're sharing that information, or that they are feeling that.
I suppose it is, you know, for the majority of people, it is something that you would doubt. You know, if it sort of, you would doubt that you were picking up on it, wouldn't you, most people?
Yes, you would, because one of the people who has excellent training techniques and excellent books on the subject is Marta Williams. And I've worked with her, and we have worked with each other on things, and she is wonderful. She is very scientific, and she has very, very good books on that explain understanding the animals talking to you, as it were. And one of the things that she explains, and I think I'm kind of taking that explanation from her, is why I say that, mm-hmm. is that it's kind of a subtle thing floating through, and it goes very quickly, and because it's not verbal, you really have to be focused on it, and the person who is doing the communicating has to be aware, and that fleeting thought that how many times have you sat there in your living room and thought, oh, I better go let the dog out. And maybe the dog wasn't anywhere in sight or hadn't tapped on the door or done anything yet, but it just kind of, something, you're reading the newspaper and something crosses your mind, I've got to go let the dog out. Well, Spot may be saying, hey, I need to go out. But it's so subtle that we just automatically, it just kind of floats through, and that's the way they communicate. It is very subtle. There's nothing in flaming colors or big pictures or anything. It's an awareness and being able to quiet your body and your mind to be able to be aware of those very subtle thoughts that go through. It's not mysterious. It's kind of like doing yoga. A person has to be able to quiet and clear their mind and their thoughts and get rid of the busyness to be able to pick up those very subtle impressions that come through. It's really quite simple in that sense, and I think that a lot of people can learn and can learn more about it if they would spend some time just focusing on it and felt that they could accept the fact that there could actually be communication there other than just things that they just learned by habit and by exposure.
Yes, yeah. I do find the whole area fascinating, I have to say. If people want to find out more about you, you have a website and you have a blog, don't you?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. I have a petsbypenny.com mm-hmm. is the website, or reikiforpaws.com. Mm-hmm. And the blog is also a Pets by Penny blog.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, I have I have lots of information. If someone is interested, there have been scientific studies done on the Reiki. There's a Tapestry of Healing book by a doctor who was both a veterinarian, traditional veterinarian, as well as a licensed MD. And she had done a wonderful book explaining her use of Reiki in both veterinary medicine and in her OBGYN practice. I have a lot of information for people. I'm always willing to talk to people as far as sharing if they want to learn more about it, as well as if they're looking for someone that can, or helping them find someone in their area if they aren't, don't want to use distance or something like that.
Yeah.
But I do think it is important for people to feel comfortable and to feel like they can trust the people they deal with, particularly in these types of areas. And I just wanted to let them know that, you know, there are professional organizations, the International Association of Reiki Professionals, that have lists online and things available to help people find someone who is skilled and reliable, and also that there is insurance available for these people that are practicing in these arts. And I think people need to be as careful talking to their people and finding a practitioner as they would with anyone else that they use for personal care or for their household or anything like that. And there are professional groups available that help regulate these.
If you'd like to find out more about Penny, we have linked to her websites and her blog. You can also follow links on the Dogcast Radio site, to Marta Williams' site, and to the International Association of Reiki Professionals. My dog is half pit bull, half poodle. Not much of a watchdog, but a vicious gossip. Craig Shoemaker.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Nick.
And I'm Kate. In this episode, we've sniffed out a couple of stories about sniffer dogs.
But first, more about a story that made quite a splash.
Yes. In the last Dogcast radio episode, Julie and Stephen Pam discussed a story about Newfoundland jumping from helicopters into the sea to rescue people. Well, we've investigated the story further and found it's not just Newfoundlands, but lots of lovely Labradors and Golden Retrievers too. All these breeds work best as they swim so naturally and so strongly. It sounds like a wonderful life for these salty sea dogs, as they spend 24 hours a day with their handler, and that bond has to be strong, as the canine-human pairs generally dive into the water together. The human partner deals with the person in the water, and then they both get towed back to safety by the dog. However, in some circumstances, the dog can dive in alone. The dogs are not only stronger swimmers than humans, but they're also faster, which is often a critical factor in water rescues.
Obviously, not all breeds take to the water as readily, and in New York, the latest activity on offer to dogs is swimming lessons. Dogs are generally eased into the water and gradually taught how to swim, as well as gaining confidence in the water. According to the Dog Runs website, with the aid of a life jacket and the assistance of one of our therapists, your English Bulldog puppy will be doing the backstroke in no time. And if you'd like to investigate that opportunity, swim over to the link on the Dogcast Radio site.
And now to a story about piracy.
So, we're sticking to the water theme then, are we?
No, not that sort of piracy. Illegal CDs and DVDs. Did you know that two sniffer dog Labradors have earned medals for outstanding service in Malaysia after exposing $6 million worth of pirated discs? And that's just in 6 months. After their successful time in Malaysia, Lucky and Flo are back home in America. The dogs are trained to sniff out chemicals found in discs, but sorting out the genuine from the counterfeit is left to humans. The canine crime-fighting duo have been so successful that criminals have put a bounty on their heads and wanted them killed.
It certainly can be a dangerous life being a sniffer dog. Recently, in Mexico City, a top police sniffer dog went missing after he was loaded into his crate on a plane. Rex the Fourth, a Malinois Belgian Shepherd, didn't reach his intended destination after thieves swapped him for a mixed-breed puppy. The story has a happy ending, though, as 5 days later, Rex was found in a park and reunited with his handlers. Rex's kidnappers apparently abandoned him when they realized the police were onto them. Arrests have been made, so it just shows, if you mess with a sniffer dog, you're going to sniff out trouble.
And finally, does your dog eat anything and everything? Particularly anything and everything it shouldn't. Well, actress Anne Hathaway has a chocolate Labrador called Esmeralda who does just that. However, Anne doesn't mind too much as she thinks Esmeralda's habits helped her get a job. During a hotel stay, the dog ate one of the hotel slippers and was then ill for the rest of the night, with the result that Anne barely slept and arrived at the audition tired and grumpy. At the time, Anne was best known for the smiley happy roles such as The Princess Diaries, but after turning up in such a bad mood, she got the role in Becoming Jane, and it helped her change her image and win even more work. And all thanks to Esmeralda and her strange appetites.
And that's all from us today on the Dogcast Radio News Desk. Goodbye.
If you can't decide between a shepherd, a setter or a poodle, get them all at Dr. Mutt. ASPCA. That Tamar Geller loves dogs can be in no doubt, and the title of her book, published in early September, is The Loved Dog. The book is subtitled The Gentle Way to Teach Your Dog Good Manners, and in the introduction, Tamar says, "To me, teaching a dog to obey sounds militant, as if the dog has no choices, and he will do what you command of him, or else. Successfully training your dog is not about getting him to obey with no questions asked. Teaching manners to your dog and building a strong bond will bring you the results you want." If you love dogs too, you'll enjoy this book, as you read about the experiences that led Tamar to develop her philosophy about dogs. After observing wolves in the wild and working as a trainer, Tamar was inspired to start the Loved Dog Centre, Southern California's first cage-free boarding and daycare centre. In the book, alongside biographical details and the touching stories of how her own dogs came into her life, Tamar details how you can use loving, playful methods to educate your dog. And satisfied clients include Oprah Winfrey, Ben Affleck, and Goldie Hawn. If you're looking for a gentle way to work with your dog, try The Loved Dog by Tamar Geller. In her words, I am not under the illusion that my beliefs are the only one to believe in, or that my way is 100% true for everyone. But I ask you to keep an open mind, an open heart, and take from my experiences whatever makes sense to you. For me, if it's not about love, I'm not interested. I hope you feel the same way. Follow the link on the Dogcast Radio site to tamargeller.com to find out more about this thought-provoking approach. One association that has dog training down to a fine art is the charity Dogs for the Disabled. If you ever get the chance to see one of their displays, you'll be amazed at what tasks the dogs they provide can carry out for their disabled owners. You can help support this vital work by sponsoring a team of 6 people from the Company of Animals who are participating in the Great Northern Run in the UK at the end of September. Sponsoring the team couldn't be easier. Follow the link to justgiving.com/COA and help make people's and dogs' lives happier. We've had a message from Erica in response to our interview with Kim Bloomer about raw feeding.
Hi, this is Erica from Ashburn, Virginia in the U.S., long-time listener of Dogcast Radio. I wanted to call and thank you for having Kim Bloom on to talk about raw diet. It was a great item to have on the show. We are also raw feeders and have been for quite some time. Like many raw feeders, or most even perhaps, we came over because of the health problems we were having with one of the dogs. It was serious allergies. He was tearing his skin up. It was so bad with the itching. And although we tried numerous diets and homeopathic remedies and all kinds of things, when we switched to raw diet, I'll tell you, it was almost overnight. 80-90% of the symptoms went away. I mean, really overnight. It was incredible. The difference was so dramatic. And I've just seen this time and time again with other people experiencing the same thing when switching to the raw diet. I'm a dog trainer, and I, in fact, like Kim, one of the first questions I ask people when they talk about their dog being itchy or having other allergy symptoms is I ask, what are you feeding the dog? And it seems I've experienced the same thing that she has. It's almost always the food. You can really have a great impact with the diet, and it's just an incredible change that you can make. It's to the point where we see the allergies so prevalent at this point in time. I don't think we can call them allergies. I think we have to start looking at them as food intolerances from a species inappropriate diet. Like feeding McDonald's to your kids, if they're going to break out and pimples, you're not going to think that something's wrong with them. You got to look at what you're feeding them. And I think that's the same thing with the dogs, that it's, allergies suggest that there's something wrong with the dog. Well, I think really there's something wrong with the diet. So it's great to see so many people starting to come around to that. The only places where I disagree with Kim, I don't know that it's fair to say that raw-fed dogs don't need flea and tick preventative. We use flea and tick preventative. We don't really see fleas, but we certainly would get ticks. And I think in the wild, wolves get fleas and ticks and parasites. So I'm not sure if there's any real evidence to say that raw-fed dogs don't need that. But for the most part, I really enjoyed the interview. I'm always glad to see that kind of information getting out there. And if it opens people's eyes to some of the other possibilities, I think that's terrific. And yes, Julie, the poops are so much less stinky and much smaller, easier to pick up. It's a nice other side effect. One other way that Kim didn't mention that people can try out a raw diet if they want is many places, certainly in the U.S. and I'm sure in the U.K. as well, is a prepackaged raw diet where you can get ground raw. Here in the U.S., one of the brands, for example, is Bravo, where you can purchase the ground meat and bone and feed that way without having to get quite as messy as getting the whole meats. And it's much more expensive to do it that way than to buy it just from your grocery store, what's on sale. But it can be a great way to dip a toe in the water for people who just want to check it out but are a little afraid of the bone and that sort of thing. Anyway, thanks for another great show. Going to look forward to the next one.
Thanks, Erica. Glad you enjoyed the interview, and thanks for the advice. Okay, you've heard us at Dogcast Radio. Would you like to see some of us? Well, when we met up with Hound TV host Steve and Pam recently, our dogs were the subject of their Hound of the Week feature. To find out more about our three dogs and to prove we have faces as well as voices, check out the latest episode of Hound TV. To keep up to date with the latest happenings with Jill's poodles, which are still in police custody, check out the website. Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs.
Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121-288-0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
What's a dog's favourite food? Anything on your plate?